But it's one of those things, isn't it?
Yes.
And the amount of meetings you can have on that bus, because you meet people, you know, oh, I need to meet you. It's quite funny, isn't it?
The whole purpose of our conversation is basically to understand your experiences on the program, because we would like to evaluate the program, but also to see if we have to do this again, what will we do differently?
Yeah.
So, Eileen talks about, are you willing to us to record it?
Yeah, of course.
So we will ask different questions, conversation. Obviously, if you have questions, please ask us. But I think a useful starting point, maybe if you can tell us a little bit more about yourself in terms of your current role, what exactly are your tasks? Okay. And we need to start at
Sorry. So my name is Hayley Deans and I've worked for the Trust for 28 years in May. I'm supposed to say I don't look old enough.
You don't look
old enough. No, so 28 years in May, and I've worked in urology for the last 12. Prior to that, I spent a lot of time. I've worked in PACU unit and surgery at the Royal. I did my training at the Royal, so I've been, sort of born and bred. In this trust, seen lots of changes, and quite actively tried to implement a lot of those as well. So initially, I was moved to urology 10 years ago, just over 10 years ago, because they were having it was a failing ward, and I was sent up there as a band 5 nurse to support the band 7. Who then left the trust for a little while, and sort of was left in charge of the ward in order to do that. During that time, we were then, with changes in surgery and changes in enhanced recovery, we managed to reduce the ward from a 29-bedded ward to a 23-bedded ward, which facilitated a move over to Broadgreen, because we could see all the elective surgery, but we could do nurse-led discharge thing, which was a big thing at the time. Robotic surgery came along at the same time, so all of the urology services went over to the Royal. There was just a small, about 12 beds left over here for patients remaining. And we kept in close contact as to how and when we could transfer patients over if need be. The Broadgreen move has its good points and its bad points. They never met anyone like the urology. There'd been an orthopaedic group over there for a little while, but we were more nurse-led, and we were quite used to seeing patients who had major surgery and used a nurse-led system in order to get them up and about. So patients who had been in hospital for 10 days, we were discharging in 36 hours. A lot of that to do with the type of surgery we were doing, but a lot of that was because the nurses knew exactly what should be achieved and how to achieve it through enhanced recovery. Our cystectomy patients who could have been in for 3 weeks, usually around 21 days it could be at times, we were trying to get home in 7 and achieving it every now and again. A lot of that changed when we went to Broadgreen, because they'd not met that type of service over there, and they set up a packing unit, so there's a lot of changes that went on with their strict management changes. Integration of teams, seeing teams being moved because of mergers, we spent a lot of time, and we had no matron over there at the time. I also at that time, because I must have looked as if I had enough breath, I actually managed the pre-op unit for 6 months. I'd previously managed 2 wards over here at the same time because of long-term sickness for about 8 months, which was 9Y and 9X, which was quite handy because they were on next to each other. So I managed the pre-op service while I was over there, and at one point I actually managed both urology wards, the urology wards over there and the urology wards over here. So we did 25 hours a week over here and the rest over there. I managed all the staff in the wards and the throughputs from that point of view. So from a urology point of view, which was quite nice if I could have sort of had a bit more. They were having problems with the wards over here, they hadn't had a manager for a little bit of while. Because it made sense, because I could see what we needed to move and what needed to be done. The doctors were dealing with one person, not three. It sort of made sense. And now that the urology ward is moving back over here, I can see what problems that they may actually encounter or what the staff need to know and learn from our point of view. So there's a lot of those type of things that we need to do.
So what is your current job title?
So my current job title is Urology Centre Unit Manager, which means that the diagnostic and therapies that come in through urology all come into our unit. So we're a regional centre, which means we can get patients from the Isle of Man, Newcastle, anywhere they need to do, because we do robotic surgery and we're one of maybe a few in the northwest. We get a lot of patients from out of area as well that come in specifically for our surgery. So whenever anyone tells us we're working outpatients, we get our backs up, because yes, we run our own outpatient department, which is decentralised from the outpatients department in the hospital, but we also do all the diagnostics. So if you come in to one of our one-stop clinics, you will get an ultrasound, you'll see a nurse, you'll be consented for a flexible cystoscopy, you'll have an ultrasound, we'll have your bloods, all that will be done in one day and reported on, and you will be discharged knowing whether you have cancer or not. And if you have got cancer, you'll have gone to pre-op clinic and you will have a date for an operation, having seen
all
a specialist
in
nurse, all in a day. Oh, it's a long day for the patient, but all in a day, and that's what we try to do for hematology patients. We think it's a good service. There are other things that we can do as well. It does take all day, because usually what's happening is your GP will send you for an ultrasound scan that will take 6 weeks, then you're going to see a consultant and he's ordered the test, that might take another 6 weeks. We try to do it all in one day, and there are a number of other things we're trying to do in one day as well, along with national guidelines, but it's trying to get the service to do it and deal with the capacity that we have. That is the other side of that, is because we're decentralised, our specialist nurses and our band 5 nurses, if you have got bladder cancer and you need BCG or mitomycin treatment, that treatment is given by us, so it's not given by the oncologist. The same treatments that will be given by us in our clinic. So we give the cytotoxic medication and the immunosuppressants in clinic each day. We give all our hormone injection for the men undergoing prostate cancer in our clinic, and again, BAMFAB nurses do that, so we work quite closely as a team, and we offer lithotripsy, so urodynamics. So the diagnostics and the treatments are usually overlooked, because we also run an outpatient department, which is a small part. One of the good things about running our own outpatient department is we can do things on demand. So if one of our consultants comes and says this patient really needs, we need to look inside the bladder, we can say give us half an hour, we can set up a room and we can do it, which stops people having to come back. It puts a little bit of pressure on us some days, but you know, we can try and do as much as we want there and then. So I also oversee the specialist nurses and their off-duty work with the CCG to try and source out our cancer targets. We've got a new team again, but we've had changes in our management team as everywhere else has 3 or 4 times in the last 3 or 4 years. So we've got a sort of a new team now. Our matron, so our matron is based over here because she also covers the renal department, so most of the time I'm sort of left with to do things till there's a problem in order to get from there.
No, thanks a lot, Hale. I think it gave us a good understanding of the current context. So I think, Aline, if you can move on in terms of...
So thinking of the leadership development programme that you went on, so given how busy you are, What did you think you'd get out of going on that programme?
So one of my previous managers had asked me to go on this, and I think the first day I walked in the room, I thought I was in the wrong room. I thought, I don't know why I'm sitting here with all these people in this room. There must be another room for people like me. But it was really good, because over at Broad Green, you're quite isolated in a way, so there's like a little bubble in its own, because you are quite removed. It's not done intentionally, but unfortunately it does happen, because you could actually run independently without them ever knowing what you were doing. So, and yes, we get emails, and yes, we get, you know, everyone tries to say we're all involved, but sometimes these things are a little bit fragmented and can happen, you know, with sections inside the world. So it actually gave me the best thing. One of the best things that it gave me was a sense of belonging to what's going on within the trust, and an understanding of how everything fits in, because sometimes you can feel very removed from what's going on. So every email about the merger, or every email that we got about the new royal, does not affect well-being, because we're not going anywhere in the merger, and we're not going anywhere in the new royal, because we're staying where we are. So you'll get hundreds of emails about these things, but it doesn't actually affect us. We're staying where we are. So most of those emails can be ignored, and it'll all be lovely and shiny and new, but it doesn't affect. But there are things that we need to know about. So when can we order this, and when can we do that? Because you know, we couldn't order anything until all the procurement was done for the new royal, and then you'd have to argue, but we're not involved in any of that, so can we please have this chair? You know, it was one of those, you know, silly things. So it gave me more of a sense of belonging. It allowed me to, I think at some point I decided that people, I said, I think, have I got an unconscious bias towards Amy? And someone said, Caroline said to me, he's got unconscious, hey? And I was going, oh yeah. Because it allowed me the opportunity to say, you know, there's more than just that part of it, because A&E is a big part of what we do, and it's great and everyone focuses a lot on A&E, but whatever happens in A&E affects individual units or wards in a different way. And I remember saying to one of the nurses one day, yeah, that's great, but you know, and she's had a lovely weekend and all the beds are being taken up and extra staff are being put, you know, patients are being put everywhere, and I was going, yeah, but we can't get our cancer patients in, so because there's extra patients, so you've taken up all of that's great, but we've got patients that we've just told we've got cancer, we've got to be seen within 21 days, and we're telling them, no, sorry, we can't have your operation yet, you know, you've got cancer, yes, we've told you it's going to take out, but it's going to affect our targets now because we can't do it. And that became as a big shock to her, and it was like, and I felt at one point that I kept sort of, but I was thinking, you know, I'm seeing your bit of the picture, but I don't think you're seeing, and sometimes we forget that there is a whole, you know, if you tell someone that they've got cancer still in this day and age with all everything that's going on, they still see it as a death sentence till you spend that time with them saying, hang on a minute, you know, we can do this, this, this and this. But if you say to them, and we will operate on you, and this is your date, and then we say to them, well, actually, it's going to be cancelled, but you know, don't worry, Amy, it's fine. You know, it doesn't really sort of, and that's not what we'd say, but it doesn't really work. But sometimes having an acknowledgement of the fact that, in the same way I did during all those sessions of the bigger picture of what's going on and how it affects, because it all does go down to the individual, really made me sort of sit back and think, no, hang on a minute, just stop sometimes. Yes, you do have to fight for your own little area, but you have to fight knowing that there's a bigger battle going on, don't you? But I think it also gave other people that opportunity as well, because they didn't, some of them are very sort of closeted in what they're doing. So, and it also gave me a chance to see how other people sort of work and react, and allow me to look at how the relationships that I had and how I could build upon those. So a prime example of that, if I, and please tell us, be quiet about the is that we work quite, we've got your own ultrasound department right next to us because we have our one-stop clinic, and historically there's always been battles between this, and I thought, I can't be dealing with this on a daily basis, so we just went over and spoke to Colin, who's the lead there, and said, look, this is what they're trying to do and this is what you're saying we can't do, is there a way we can come to a compromise? And he said, this is the first time anyone's ever come over and had a conversation with me, people come over and shout at each other, you know, about, I need this and I need it now. And I to explain to me, which is why I remember speaking to one of the other girls, and I know that they have so many targets that they can be penalised if they don't meet, but in a financial way, our cancer targets are different than that, and they have a service. So I could then go back to our consultant and say, no, stop, hang on, they're doing as much as they can. We need to look at what we're doing here. We can't put a demand on a service that is just because the next door. So at one point we were sending 20 or 30 patients around for ultrasounds that had never been booked, so that would need to be done on the day. So, but they're running an outpatient service as well. And people who are waiting for these things, they're doing as much as they can. So if they say no, it means they've reached their full capacity, and it means stop and send them for a different test if it's appropriate. Or can we make a list and say, we know these six people are coming in on this date, let's boot them in. So we arrange for the band 5 nurses to be able to boot the certain ultrasounds in certain ways. All the nurses went on ERMA training, the specialist nurses, so we can book them in a better way. And so, and that's sort of gone on over the last sort of few months. So this week I've been to see them and said, okay, Christmas. On a Wednesday and a Thursday when we were not one stop, it's going to be Christmas Day and Boxing Day, but we don't really want to miss being able to see 32 patients that might have cancer. Is there anything we can do about it? So we said, oh, hang on. So we sat there and he said, I can give you an extra list there and I can do this because we've got 10 or 11 weeks. So I've been able to go back to our doctors and say, look, we can still achieve our targets and see all these patients. We just need to do things a little bit differently during that time. And it'll mean we don't lose any slots. In fact, I think we'll have gained a couple, but I was keeping that a bit quiet because I don't think there'll be less. But it's that type of communication, because we get that bogged down with sort of shouting at each other and or demanding from each other. Sometimes you just need a conversation. And it's how you go about with that conversation. Because you can sort of get wound up by someone, oh, they're missing, and you go, ah, oh, go and speak to them. And it's like, you know. So, yeah, it's given me a better awareness of everything, really, but mostly a lot of time to reflect upon, you know, how I'm doing things. And I think when I sent mine to my manager, my portfolio, she said it was very, it, because it was a reflection, she said, I was very self-aware, which means to me meant that I did well, because a lot of what I got out of it was a very personal journey. I think he was not aware, but in order to see how I can make improvements, that might improve other things. So it felt good knowing that I'd been able to put that down on paper quite well.
Was there a particular catalyst in the course that triggered some of these things?
I think it was the first two or three, I'll be perfectly honest, I was thinking, a lot of it I was thinking, I really don't know, you know, why I'm still sort of sitting. I'm definitely in the wrong. They shouldn't have invited me to this, but I was enjoying it. But I was thinking, this is more for other people, that shouldn't be going on. And then we went to, I can't remember the lady's name, she wore glasses when we were in that first little room, and we had a session, and it was to do with operational planning, and it was before that session, and it knew and something just, and I thought, no, because if I'm not here, if managers get, a certain group of managers get together, we're all on the same line, all they know about is what they do, so it helped having people, like Neil there, when Neil was first there at the initial, because he's got a bigger overall view than any of us probably in that room did at any one point. And we were talking about things, and I was thinking, you know the answers to them, and you're just not telling us. You know, so there was people in that room that did have that knowledge we didn't really need to know, but at that particular point. But then there was also things that, I'm in a privileged position where clinically I still do a lot of clinical things, so I'm in that weird position where you can do a little bit about what operationally you can help and see how it will work. And I think you can get that far up in the management structure that you lose some clinical credibility, and I don't mean that as, you know, any individual, but you do, because nursing has changed so much from even when I started, and you do see things come and go, and you think we've done this and it's called something different, but that's just life, isn't it? But it's the whole premise of nursing and what is expected from nursing. Years ago, when the patient was put on antibiotics, the doctor gave the first two doses, the patient got three doses because the doctor got fed up coming back. That was more because they waited there for the doctor to come and make it up. Then all nurses could do it because the doctors were too busy, so we all started giving them antibiotics. But then it was getting them to stop the antibiotics. Now, if you say to a house officer, well, do you know house officers used to give the first two doses, they laugh at you. Apart from the fact they all look 12, because that's how old I'm getting. But it's those type of changes. So two of my nurses are doing the prescribing. 4 years ago, we would never have thought we'd have nurses prescribing. And it's what they're prescribing. So yes, we could all give two paracetamol if you signed a PGD. But the prescribing hormone and bladder treatments for cancer patients, that years ago you'd think that would never happen, or it will only happen under. But this is becoming the norm. We're taking on more and more jobs that used to be seen as junior doctors' roles. But we still have to maintain that basis of we are nurses and we are supposed to be at the beds that we need to get, you know, the ABC is right, that people still view us as that person there to care. And, you know, there is always going to have to be someone saying, hang on a minute, we need to go back and care for someone. And just sometimes just holding someone's hand and being there for them and listening counts, you know, the most.
So we covered 11 topics in the programme. Is there anything from the programme that you use and apply to practice?
So some of the coaching stuff I've revisited because I've done a coaching course before, but that was a good, and I've actively sought a coach since then as well, which is something I hadn't done. I haven't done the coaching course because I thought it would be helpful just for me, from a personal point of view, really. And it helps from a networking point of view as well, because you're going out and seeing different things in different areas. So that was quite helpful. I've used some of the reflections that we used in the portfolio. I'm doing on everything. So I filled in the reflections and scribbled all over them and wrote me things before I wrote whatever was going in the portfolio. But to me, that gave me what I keep calling breathing space, because we did have a session all about giving yourself time to breathe and seeing if you can get an hour during the day, which resonated with me because I was thinking, you know, sometimes I go on about, I'm that busy and I'm running around it, but you know, am I actually running around achieving much, or do we just need to stop and give myself 10 minutes to think, and then I won't have to run around so much because I can actually think things through properly. And I don't have an office, so I'm sort of easily accessible to every bit of, you know, whenever it happens. So that's really helped, and helped in my personal life as well, really, because it's actually gone over to that, where I thought when other things have happened, I thought, stop, don't react, because I seem to be the person people come to because they want something done quick, and they know I'll react quickly, but that's not always the best way, you know, to do it. So, yeah, being taught how to breathe, which made me laugh when it was mentioned in the... It was that strategy that allowed me to change a lot of things that I've been doing since. And it started off quite small, but as I'm recognising it more and more each day that I'm doing it or saying, stop, you know, and I'll come back to you and giving myself more time. So it was that time to think, yes, there's lots of things that are going on. And the time to think that, you know what, I can't influence everything that I want to influence. And, you know, and be able to do the best that I can. And there was also something about making sure about your work time balance, and that we went on quite a lot about, and how it helps. That's resonated quite a lot with me as well in order to do it. I've used some of the models as well. I'm getting better at using them, because a lot of them you sort of do in your head, and but I'm trying to put them on paper now because it's easy to revisit them and then go back and see how things change quite quickly in order to do it. But at least you know what your basic aim and vision was when you first started, and if that needs to be changed along the way, then it's a progression, isn't it? Or you can show your progression. I started doing these progress reports that I sent to my line manager, and it's quite funny because they've changed. So I'd started doing them just before, probably 2 or 3 months. I'd sent her 2 or 3 beforehand, which basically a list of what I've been doing, what we've achieved, and what was going on. And when I look back at them now, I think, oh my God, they don't even make sense. They do make sense, but now they're a little bit more structured as to what, and a bit more realistic, because, you know, I think it can change the world. Just need to keep chipping away at it. But it's okay, acknowledge the chipping away, is then acknowledge each one. And what made me laugh the day is we've just got a new manager, a project manager to work with our cancer team. I think he started in April. And he made me laugh the other day because he said he was getting me a plaque that said, don't worry, we'll get there. And I said, hang on a minute, if I'm the most positive person in this room, we've got problems, you know. And he's going, we've been really positive since I got here. And I was thinking, no, I'm really serious, you know, usually. I'm the doom and gloom merchant. So, but it's not, it's just, it's one of those. So it has changed a lot of the way I'm thinking and projecting myself. I sound like a... I don't know whether that's what you wanted to do, but from my point of view, it's been a very, you know, personal journey.
You mentioned a few models that you're putting down on paper, and
I can't. You're going to ask me the names of them all.
So, did any of those models change your practice? For example, the way you interact with people, the way you make decisions, or anything that you can think of.
You're going to ask me the names of them. I'm not really
sure. You don't have to tell the names. But
yes, it has, and it's made me reassess some of the. So I've been having a particular problem with one of the relationships with one of the managers in our team, which in the end we went over and just had a sit down conversation, and that's changed because it was actually becoming. It wasn't a toxic relationship, but we were hindering going forward with things rather than. And I thought, you know, I'm a big enough person to be able to go, look, we need stuff. And it was really good, and I don't think I'd have done it beforehand, I'd just gone, and moaned about it. And it was really nice, because she was doing she's been doing the MBA, the initial one, and I think we both recognised, we were both probably thinking of each other, while we were, that's what I do. And so that's been quite nice, and a couple of months ago, we were going through a bit of a, and I said, and then, look, I don't want to go back to the way we were, we'd come so far forward. And she said, no, Hayley, neither do I, so let's stop now. Yeah. And you and I go for a coffee tomorrow. And it might be something really small, but that helps because it means that next, hopefully it won't happen again, or it will go less and less, but we get to know each other. Does that make sense? And I know it's not a particular, oh, I've used this model and I write things down, but it's the awareness of the fact that needs to happen. Mm. And those little things can make such big differences that I never recognised. And the fact that it took me 28 years probably to recognise them is a big thing, you know. You won't be able to write a paper on it and go, ooh, and it won't look lovely on a piece of paper, but it's making so many differences to our daily sort of life and how we're planning things for, you know, hundreds of people within our directorate, that it's worked. And it was really nice that even when she emailed back and said, look, yeah, shall we stop and you and I will meet and just have a coffee tomorrow. And when we had that coffee, we didn't talk about anything about work. We actually spoke about each other and realised we'd never had a conversation that was never to do with work. But it just helped to me to make us realise that, you know, we're both human and we both have other things. She says, I didn't know you had kids. And I was like, okay. And I didn't know. It was just a strange conversation that you have after knowing someone for probably 18 months that you really probably should have had day one or two. Do you know what?
I think that's a very, very powerful story, to be honest. The strength of personal relationships and treating people as human.
Because we're very good at caring for other people.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. Because you come across as so passionate about caring for patients and their humanity.
Yeah, but we just
as
don't.
As an outsider listening to you.
And it's funny, you know, because my kids, I mean, they're older now, 21 and 16. But I remember years ago saying to them, I had care for living, don't care at home. Remember that? Do you know when they've like fell over and they've hurt the leg? If they weren't ill, and I go, oh, get up.
Yeah.
I care for them, I don't care, get on with it. And I remember one of them saying it in the schoolyard to another child and, or saying to them, God, people in hospital, I make less noise than you. I thought, oh my God, you can't say things like that. And but it is one of those things is that nurses aren't around, you know, you go, they don't have paracetamol home, they don't have brufen, you can pull over, go, well, give me your ass, give it a rub, yeah. But because you spend so much time, and sometimes even then you have to stop and think, well, oh, hang on, who's doing it?
No, it's
joyful. We're all bad.
It's joyful to hear it. If I were to ask you something, so this is almost like playing devil's advocate. Say some senior people came to you and said, oh, you know, I've been looking at the money we spent on this course and, you know, the beds it could release or the machines it could buy. What would you say to them?
We had that type of thing because I think I think Caroline in particular had to fight to come over sometimes to have that. And there was times during the winter that we'd have less and less of the people I thought I probably should be sitting in the same room as I put it. Coming over, and I felt that really the little group that we had, that little core group, was a good group, and I learned so much from them all as individuals. They probably got fed up with me wittering on, but it really was very good for me. But that bigger section would have helped so much more to enrich what was going on, because it would have given us a little bit more focus and a little bit more understanding of where everything fitted in. So while I understand that, you know, yes, we have pressures, but if not, we end up like I was, you're just closeted in that isolated bit thinking, this is, we need to do this, we need to do this. My 16-year-old, my ex-husband works for the CCGs, and a couple of weeks ago, my son rang him to ask him something, and he must have rang him 3 or 4 times, and he said, I had to come out of a meeting, and he said, do you know what's wrong, I'm in a meeting? And he went, you've been in meetings all my life. He said, there's either no beds, no money, and no way to put anyone. Haven't you solved it yet? And he said, I went back into the meeting feeling as if I'd spent my whole life doing nothing. He said, but I shared it with the people in there. And one of them went, oh my God, he's right. He said, and we've been sitting in the same meetings for his whole life. And it was an offhanded, but when you think about it, if we don't do something different, we're going to sit in those same meetings, having the same bed crisis. We need to start thinking differently. And isn't that the opportunity to breathe and spend that time doing that? Because we're not going to change otherwise, and we have to change how the NHS works, or we're going to lose it. And I will put every, you know, I'll fight for, most of us would, with every bit part of my body, to stop that happening, but we're going to have to change something
fundamentally.
So what
do you think that is, that difference might be, and the difference you're starting to make?
We need to educate the public as to what we need to do. We need to start trusting each other a bit more with how we do things, which is going to be the hardest bit, because sometimes I feel as if they ban me from CCG meetings. So when they have these meetings, I go, can I go? And I'm not really, can I go or shall I not go? And they just go, no, don't you come. Because I'll sit there and they'll know that isn't what happens. So, and they all look at me because politically they need to make this change. And I go, well, tell them what is actually going on. No, don't say that. And it's like, and it's not that we're hiding anything. We're all just playing this stupid game of, oh, well, I've got this bit of money and you've got this bit of money. And I'm like, well, all said and done, it's NHS money, isn't it? This is how we need to spend it in our little department. And if you can't give us all of it, maybe we can do it this way, or maybe. But unless we talk and talk honestly, it's not going to happen. So, and I'm not very good at lying because I haven't got It's not that, but yeah, I've never learned that, you know, you can see everything that I'm feeling on my face as soon as you say it. But it's not only that, you've got to be really clever to lie properly. And I'm not, so I don't mind giving in, going, look, I'm not very clever. Let's just say, are we going to do this? And let's all be honest, and we'll just go away, do what we need to do. And in some ways it works, and in some ways it's never going to work, but I can't think 7 moves ahead. Some people have got those, like, chest brains, haven't they, where they can get, and I go, just a game, you know, but, and I'm not very good at playing it, but I don't think we're ever going to get anywhere unless we stop playing. And that might be a very naive way of looking at it. It probably is, but it can be done in small groups to achieve a lot. And then when we start it in small groups and we start achieving, then people might stop and say, well, actually, do you know what, we need, I don't know, but we need to do something. But at the moment, we're still doing everything we did the same way we did it 10 years ago. We might give it a different title, but nothing's changing.
And it's a yeah, so you're talking about trust and collaboration,
I
think.
I went to one of those, I live in Sefton.
Yeah.
So I went to one of their big chats. They have these big chats, so they get the public involved in what's going on. And I sat in this big chat, because I'm general public, aren't I? And I just thought, Dad Gavin, I was sitting there, and I was thinking, and it was when the new Royal did first started, the new Royal was initially, we thought was going to be completed a couple of years ago. And they were talking about what time they'll have all these beds, and I'm sitting there thinking, they haven't got any beds. And no, every single bed, and I was going, no, because we're losing 200 beds. So, and this had all been in the public domain, it hadn't been hidden back from anyone. And there was a person sitting next to me who was actually, he was an oncologist, he was retired, and he's sitting there and he's going, he haven't got that many beds, haven't you? And I was going, because we'd all sort of introduced ourselves, he had like little 6 tables. And I was thinking, oh, I said, listen, I'm here as a member of the public, I'm not here. He went, but you haven't had yet? And I was going, no, but it's been in the echo. And we were sitting having this little gab, and I was going, don't, because you could tell all over his face, it was the devilment of it all. And he was saying, but they're not listening to each other. So they're making, the CCG are making a plan about this, and you're making a plan about this, and nothing's going on. And I was going, yeah, but I don't want to be the person to tell them, because I can get myself into trouble, you know, in work time, I don't need to do it here. So a good idea of this little chat, which was involving just members of the public, and anyone can go, but it's like the public knew more than what was being presented there. And it was lovely to hear about, oh, you know, you'd be able to do this with, we're not going to be putting these medications on prescription, you'll have to buy them. Well, yeah, they're not doing it, cost 15 pence, it was paracetamol and brew. That was great, but the bigger plans were being missed in what was, and all of this was out in the public sort of forum, and I just thought, we're not listening to what each other, because we're all focused on the financial part of what's going on, but the finances would improve if we actually sat down and said, is catheter, right? So catheterization is something we do all day, every day. We've got a new specialist nurse with us, and we have problems. So if, as men get older, the prostate's growing, it just happens. Sometimes it's because they've got cancer, sometimes it's because it's a muscle, it just gets a little bit lazy, like anything else. And they can have problems passing water. A lot of these men end up being catheterized. And they'll end up in hospital, they'll be discharged from hospital. Some of them will have had an operation for an orthopaedic operation, and they'll end up with a catheter in because it's just an age thing, and it's to the discharge. Everyone wants us to see every single patient in this hospital that's been discharged with a catheter. We can't physically do that. From a governance point of view, we can't do it as well, because if a urologist is not looking after that patient, it'd be like me going and saying to Jamie, well, I can do yours as well. You just can't do it. That's because you've never met them, you don't know what's going on, you don't know anything about them. They can't just rock up in the clinic and go, oh, take this out, because if you take it out and they've got a cancer, that's being missed. So, but there's a way of sorting that out. So if we work with the community team in order to say, okay, you take the catheter out, meet with the continence team and see if we can arrange that, then if there is a problem, then we can refer them back into the urologists. But what we didn't realise is those two teams worked totally, so the continence team and the district nurses worked totally separately in totally separate buildings, so we need them to talk to each other. Now, if that means that I have to send out a nurse with them until they are confident that that's going, then we can arrange that. But we need to have that conversation first of all. Otherwise, all those patients end up back in A&E, and we're trying to stop people going in A&E for a couple of hours to be sent back out again, but it's taking up a lot of time and resources. So trying to sit and speak to these people, and the fact that maybe they need more machinery, unless that's something we can take at the hand, tell one out. Can we meet them halfway in order to have, you know, those conversations to try and improve what's going on? There's Bullens run a service down where they deliver all the supplies, but they've got treatment rooms there that they might be able to see patients if it was patients that didn't need to hit A&E. And it's to keep everyone away from A&E in order to look after something easy. The catheterisation policy says that you teach ISC, which is intermittent self-catheterisation, but no one's happy to do because they don't have the time to do it here. So what we're planning on doing is meeting with Jane Connor, who we also met on this course, and go up to the local. She works in the community, she's a liaison. So we can go out to the local meetings with the GP surgery and talk to them and say, you know, in an ideal world, would you expect from us? How can we meet halfway? Is the training we can do with your nurses? Could we, with the girls from Aintree, meet somewhere, do some training, be there as a support, just talk to each other as professionals? Because in this city, if you want to speak to a district nurse, you have to go through a point of care test. And so I can't just ring a district nurse and say, look, I'm worried about this patient. What do you think? You see them normally? I have to speak to a clerk who will tell me that the nurse will contact me at a certain time on the mobile if they've got time. Then they might bring me back that day. If not, they might have to ring me back the next day. And I just want to speak to someone else who I can say, as a nurse can say, I have this concern. What do you think? Is this something you're ready? 10-minute conversation could probably really assist, but we can't do it. So with Jane, we're going to be able to go out and try and speak to them and say, is it an education thing? Is there something that you haven't got that we can provide and discharge these patients with that will help? And there'll be about 7 or 8 quick wins that we can do there. But the biggest win will be the fact that we're talking to each other. And that's what, you know, will happen. So now she's back from the Maldives, Jane's going to help us with that, which is good and will make a big difference to my service. Well, yeah, ultimately, to the patients.
Yeah.
Do
you think that would have happened if you hadn't been on the course?
I'd never have met Jane.
Right, okay.
I'd never have met Jane. And when we were sitting there talking, we kept going, oh, we could do something. And, you know,
okay.
Just like, because I would never have known that she, that she existed and what her role was.
Okay.
But we do a lot of that type of care and a lot of the dropping things. But even from a prostate point of view, we run a self-health group in Chilwell 5 Ways in one of the GPs, which they've given us free, and it's just a drop-in thing. And some of my bad fives and fours go out and they will speak to the man, and it's just getting them together. The whole aim of it is that it will be self-run by the gentlemen themselves, and we will go in probably once a quarter and answer any questions and do like a little, you know, we'll go from there. But they've always got someone that can talk to, because it's very difficult to get men together to talk. Some of the wives come too, but they're talking about their personal journeys, and it's helping each other and supporting each other. The good thing from my point of view is every time we change a leaflet, patient information leaflet, I send it to the group, and when I come back, hey, you've spelled this wrong, and I was like, I'm not writing all of them, but they love telling me all the bits.
Yeah.
But they also are very insightful as to what should have happened or what they feel should have been in these things. So we're getting proper feedback, not that it's not proper, but from people who've never had this thing. These people have actually experienced some of this, and they'll say things like, you know, if you put this and that would help them, it's things we might not have thought of. So that's been, they are my sort of my reading group, and people say, send this to the reading group. I'm going to have to go out one day. But it's helpful, from that point of view. So if we can get Jane, that might be something Jane's got, other people that we can advertise a little bit more. In November, we're going to celebrate November, but we're also going to invite some of the, we run some of these groups, a robot group, so our robotic surgery, and some of the men who've had robotic surgery will come in and talk to the people undergoing surgery in the next couple of months. So we have a robotic group, we call it, and we'll get a patient from the who's had it surgery, might have been 2 or 3 years ago, and he'll come in and say, well, this is what happened to me, and this is what went on. And that is, it doesn't matter how many times you tell them how to change the catheter, what's going to happen, what the surgery's like, show them the robot, that man, it's quiet, everyone listens, everyone, and it's a nice time, and people are there and all support each other. They might meet when they're in the hospital anyway, so it's quite a nice thing for them to do, and we're hoping that they will then go to the support group, but you know, that's an individual thing. We're going to try and thank those people who give up the time freely, just because they're in at the end of November, so we're having just like a cup of tea and a thank you thing to invite those ones that come in And some of them bring the wives, and the wives will stand up and speak to the wife, the other wives, and say, well, this is how, you know, we got through this part and everything. But that makes more sense to us. And yes, I have to staff it, and yes, we send staff to do it, but that does more than us giving 20,000 leaflets out. Or because it shows that we are there for them, and the fact that patients are given their own time, you know, it is more helpful. But trying, the fact that we started this, but through being able to link with other people, it's getting a little bit bigger and better in order to achieve more for them.
So, Hayley, if you had to do this program all over again, what would you like to change?
I think if I did it all again, I'd listen more. I like to talk, I should probably know this. I'd listen more. I think that I found the first probably three. I will the lady had glasses and curly hair. I will remember her name when I get leave this room, probably. I just felt a little bit overwhelmed, but that was a personal thing, really. And then, but even by being overwhelmed by what was going on, there were so many positive things that I probably didn't look as if I was getting positives out of it. So from my point of view, that was a more of a personal thing. I'm not explaining it very well, but it really has changed my outlook of what I'm doing. And having been here for so long, I never wanted to be that nurse that, you know, when you went into handover, where they go, oh yeah, well there's that, not in change. And I'd sit there when I was a student looking at it and go, why are you still nursing? Because you are one bit of twisted on the couch. And you know, you don't care about nothing. And you'd sit there as a student thinking, oh my God, these people. And I never wanted to become that nurse. And I think that there is that slide that you can go down and, yeah, okay, I've maintained my passion and I can talk forever about, you know. But in order to not become that nurse, you need to actually look at your own students and think, I don't want them to think I'm that nurse. And so it's changed my outlook on what I need to do. I never wanted this to be a job that you just turned up. I know everyone goes, well, you just turn up, do your job, go, you can't as a nurse, I'm sorry. The people doing that, they're not doing it. But if they are, they shouldn't be doing it. You know, they should be doing something totally different. There's always going to be that little bit of that keeps you. Otherwise, my kids go, Mummy, you're doing your work or your voluntary work for the NHS today? And I go, well, yeah, I'm still here, I'll be home in a minute. That's a personal choice. I'm not saying everyone has to do that. You just, that's something that we all do. We all give that extra few because we like to finish what we've started. But it has really, at this point in sort of my career in nursing, it's really given me a way of revitalising what I'm doing, because I could have become that bitter and twisted. I can't even think, oh my God. And I can remember as a student seeing some of them, I can even remember what was, and I wasn't thinking, I never want to become. And I think I was getting to that. I really do think I was getting to be that sort of, not that changes, what's the point? And it really stopped me from doing that, because it's made me just think so much differently. But it's not something that you could actually put and say, it was this. It was the whole sort of weeks of getting to know that group of people, living their experiences, seeing how they interact and talk with each other, and thinking, no, there are more people like the way I felt out there that are doing that type of thing. Because you do think, managers don't know. They don't know because they're not here, they're not doing this, they don't understand, they make decisions that we have to implement and no one listens to us, but no, they do. They just, sometimes they might have to have it highlighted how each change it. But maybe that was it, the whole link of the fact that the bigger managers are trying, they just might, it's just a long process of getting there. I'm not making sense.
No, you are making sense, you're making lots of sense.
Thanks a lot, Ellie. It was really interesting listening to you.
Sorry.
The last question maybe from my side is, you mentioned your portfolio.
Yeah.
Is it possible for us to get access to your portfolio?
Yeah, I can say it is very self. When I sent it to Caroline, she said, it's very self-aware. Are you sending this? But no, you can have a little look at it.
Sure.
It'll probably be very different than everyone else's. But it was more of a personal journey for me. But I think you said that at one point, this is something that needs to do. But yeah, I can email it to Caroline. Is that okay?
And if I can ask, you know the initiative that you started off with, Jane Connor?
Yeah, so that's...
Would you be tracking that through in November to see if it's sort of save money? Because
well,
you know the way people love money.
Yeah.
Now, we all know it's about people, but money talks.
And it does
pay
wages.
Would you track that and come up with some...
It is, and because it's quite new.
Or something?
Because it's quite new, it might be something we can do from the first.
That would be wonderful if you could. that, you know, feed in fire, Karen, because it would show this sort of, to me, what you're talking about is the course, help that networking,
yeah,
that sense of community, we're in this together,
yeah,
and from that, you know, the conversations that occurred,
and even if it
reduces
any admissions,
yeah,
that to me it's a win, do you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
But you've given us some lovely examples there,
yeah,
of where those follow-on conversations and,
yeah,
relationships would have saved loads of money.
And do you know, I'll have
money talks with the,
yeah,
higher ups.
I'll have a little look as well, because when we first started the robotic surgery, because we went from 10 days to 36,
yeah,
hours, my nerves, I'll be quick, because you're thinking, you know, that's a big, even as a nurse. And while we understood what was going on, so what we did then was, when we were managing the ward here, I had a first over there, and we used to tell the patients that we were going to ring them 2 days after surgery and check things, everything was okay. And we explained to them, we're not checking up, you're not being discharged to any, we're just going to ring you, check if the district nurse is being out checked. And there was a bit of, initially, of me thinking, just check them up.
Yeah,
this is new surgery. I'll be perfectly honest. And it wasn't that the surgery was any good, it was just all very new. But those telephone calls within 48 hours, which we did for all robotic, and then we did it for all the enhanced recovery patients. So you could sit to them and they go, hey, they haven't used the toilet, they're going to put me sent me home with some lactose. Have you? Oh, no, I haven't used it. Okay, don't worry about it. But there's blood in my urine when I've had my bowels. So, yeah, but that's normal. Think about it. Those conversations might take 20 minutes on the phone, but the amount of, oh, they go, the district nurse hasn't been out, oh, I can get on to that. Those silly little things that you can do, but the fact they knew that was going to happen would stop them going to the GP, because they go, no, because Hayley's going to ring one. At one point, our ward clerk was doing them, because she'd go, they'd ring me, go, oh, she hasn't rung me yet, and she'd talk them through, and she'd go, no, that. But it was just the fact that they were there at home, they couldn't do an awful lot, they could pot around, because they still had to have major surgery, but all they could think about was the fact they just had major surgery. So every tiny little thing that they would normally think it was nothing was an issue. But knowing that we were going to ring on Sunday or on Monday made them think, no, don't do anything, we'll ring them. And the other thing was that if we did think there was a problem, so if one of them said, be wounds or something, and I go, I'll tell you what, can you come in at 4 o'clock and I'll have a little look at it before we go anywhere, because the doctor will be here. If there's an issue, we can get this sorted. It didn't happen a lot, but if there was a big issue, we dealt with it quicker than them actually going through the whole A&E or wherever they were, you know, and anywhere. So, but that bit of reassurance, but you know, by far was the best thing that we got out of that, because we'd say, and it'd be, you'd have a laugh with them as well, because I go, I don't like that stuff, eat licorice, oh my god. And they go, in the end, they go, the district nurse, do you want to wait for them? I go, well, actually, yeah, they do, you know. But the patients, when they came back and spoke to us, when we saw them 10 days later to take the catheter out, it was broken up, so they'd speak to us at day two, they'd see us at day 10 because we're taking the catheter out, and then they'd have another 8 weeks before the histology came back. But they knew. So but now when they're running into clinic years later, they go, oh, well, now we're young. It's like, oh, my God.
Are you capturing any of that stuff in your portfolio at all?
I don't think so, because it happened quite a long time ago. It's something that we're going to have to revisit,
right,
because now the ward's coming back over here. The staff over here are new to all of this type of surgery, and it's something I've spoken to the consultant and said, I think really they need to set a time.
Yeah.
Just initially, while the staff are getting used to the procedures,
yeah,
and the operation,
yeah,
and discharge. But I had about 2 years of, I kept all of those because I found them,
yeah,
quite powerful. And I sent them all to the consultant, and he said they did, but it's something that we're both,
yeah,
going to ask the staff over here to do. With Matron, to say, I think it will be good for the staff as well,
mm-hmm,
as the patient, because them knowing that, oh, I can actually help this,
yeah,
and stop it. But all of those patients at some point would have ended up in A&E, and all of those, you know, if they had a problem, if you saw blood in your catheter after having an operation, you'd start worrying. But if you can say, yeah, but you've just had your bowels open, so think about where everything,
yeah,
is it all okay now, bring me back in 2 hours, is everything clear now, everything's clear, so you didn't need to go to A&E and spend 4 hours waiting to see someone. And the other thing was, we didn't want the catheter also protects the operation site, so if you're pulling things, if they come into A&E and they take the catheter out and put another one in, they could go right through the MR and anastomosis and cause us, you know, problems in the future. So it was those tiny little different things that meant so much, which we're going to have to start doing. Well, I think I'm going to push,
yeah,
although it's not my remit really, but I think they'll need, I think it would be very beneficial for the staff to do them. And Matron's off sick at the moment, but I'm sure I can convince her, just, it takes it's quite a pleasurable thing to do because most of the patients are just so happy that someone's rang them and they, I'll get the wife whenever I need to speak to you because you're the one who's at the operation. Oh, she talks better than me and I'm going up. And you end up speaking to half the family. And it, you know, but it is nice. You think, I haven't got time for this, but it is quite nice to do.
Thanks a lot. Do you have any questions for us you would like to ask?
I'm hoping that, are you going to be able to let other people go on it or is it going to be a finance thing?
This is part of why I wanted to be able to prove that it's a really useful programme so that I can go back to execs and say, please can we have some more money for this? Because I haven't got a budget for a pen, do you know, like, so.
Well, if I can help in any way.
Brilliant. I know you have done it.
You know, this is really helpful, but any figures that you might have, you know, in your initiative, because we know that the love figures and what you've talked about is really, really powerful stuff. If you had any sort of figures that you were tracking that, that would be brilliant that you could pass to Karen because they know, you know that's what they look at.
Yeah.
As well as
what you
told us.
Well-being, isn't it? The fact that it's
those
girls
that you can't
having a coffee
huge stuff.
Now and that's around how you feel at work, isn't
yeah.
it?
Well, that has meant that we can plan for Christmas. We're looking at meeting our targets this year over the Christmas period, and I don't think me and Hayes would have enjoyed being in the room together, trying to do that together.
And
that's
what you talked about going to see, and him saying, right, well, this is the problem you're causing me.
Yeah.
I think of the money that's saved by scheduling those appointments. So that's something that would not have happened, that has resulted, and you can actually count that and quantify it.
Yeah.
And the work, because a lot of the work that we're going to do with Jane, I think will be.